This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
It's so nice to see you here. Good morning, friends online. For how many of you is this the first time up the hill to Jikoji? Can you raise your hands? Half. So thank you for facing that mountain and coming here. And thank you to all of you who have returned. We are always kind of looking forward to those who return to practice with you again. As you may have surmised, this is not a once and done practice. So we look forward to seeing you again. I myself have just returned to Jikoji. I went down south to Santa Barbara County, where I made my home for 40 years. And I got to sit with my old Sangha, my first Sangha, real Sangha, at Santa Barbara Zen Center. One of my friends is here online from there. And it was really wonderful to reconnect with these people who kind of held my hand when I first really stepped onto the path. And also to meet new students there and to talk Dharma together. When I arrived at my home is still there, a place where I had a family, raised my kids, and had a career. When I arrived at my home, the only remaining neighbor from my many, many, many years of living there saw me pull up and getting groceries out of my trunk, and he yelled across the street to me, "Hey, you're back. Are you just visiting or are you here? And I had to laugh, like, "Well, I'm visiting, yes. Am I here? Yes, kinda, sorta, maybe. I don't really live there anymore." And I just stood there laughing because honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. And that one question from my neighbor was like a little Zen koan in the middle of the street, right? No cushion required. Just shouted out across the street. The driveway is also a zendo, it turns out. So I spent a few nights in my home, and it was a very interesting experience. This is a community that I mentioned I lived in for 40 years. It's the longest I've lived anywhere by 4 decades. So it was very poignant to be back there. I walked in my garden, everything in that ground we planted. And I ate a ripe, warm peach right off the tree. And I picked some fruit. And it was just delightful to walk through these little spheres. I walked through these, like a little sphere. I just imagined a sphere. Well, this is a sphere when my children were, you know, running around naked in this garden. And here's the sphere of all the parties we had over here over the years. And here's the sphere of different family events, births, deaths. And here's the sphere of all the chickens and ducks and dogs and cats and my son really liked lizards and all the little creepy crawlies that he had like 30 of them living in his room. All of those creatures were there too. And yet, even though all of this was deeply, poignantly familiar, I really felt I couldn't shake the sense of not being at home in my own home. The person who lived there in each of these spheres, in all of those spheres, is gone. Everybody who made that place a home wasn't. What remained was this beautiful garden, this beautiful house, echoing, just echoing with ghosts. The interesting experience physically for me was that it's a big house. I raised kids in there and all these animals. And in this very nice, luxurious house, luxurious meaning it has air conditioning and a dishwasher, big deal. You know, it's a big space. And I felt somehow diminished in this huge space, kind of like I was a hermit crab. And you know, hermit crabs, these really cute little creatures who scavenge old shells to make homes in them to protect their soft bodies. And I felt like somehow I was trying to squeeze myself back into an old shell, and I couldn't quite fit. Some of you know Thomas Wolfe, this very famous line from Thomas Wolfe. He wrote this: "You can't go back to your family, back home to your childhood, back home to romantic love, back home to a young person's dreams of glory and fame, back home to the old forms and systems of things, which once seemed everlasting, but which are changing all the time. Back home to the escapes of time and memory." Thomas Wolfe's point, of course, is that that person who lived there is no longer here, because everything changes, including the one who lived there, and the garden and the house is just constantly in movement. And when I say that person is gone, it's not like gone, all the way gone. Somehow, all of those me's, all of those this's have integrated into this, right? So she's not really gone. And yet, driving away from that home was sweet and a sense of grief and loss. Returning to Jokoji, where I've lived for almost 2 years. And I returned again because of this visit and leaving to this very, very essential aspect of our practice. And that is this is all mine, all my fabrication and yours. We're doing this together. Part of this awareness of mind fabricating reality is that I don't know who this is anymore. I just had this very poignant sense that, well, I don't know who she is now. I'm familiar with this because I've lived a long time. At different times in life, you just have this experience of reinventing. You actually are reinventing every day. But sometimes we remember that we're really not holding on to anything. There's no ground, and yet we're grounded. This kind of not knowing who I am is not knowing in a kind of liberative sense. It doesn't feel like I'm smaller, it feels like I've expanded. So I told you that my house is a nice house with a dishwasher, which I really enjoyed with my one dish. But I felt a little diminished there, and I get back to Jokoji, and I have two little smaller rooms. They're nice rooms, but small, and I felt expanded. So this is not knowing. The realm of not knowing gives you like this vast territory that is everything in you. So it's actually kind of a goodbye, hello in every moment. Goodbye, old self. Selves, hello, whatever is coming next. Whatever, whoever, this is right now. Without any ideas about the outcome. Not in charge of the outcome. I'm responsible for this moment. My Dharma sister Carolyn Atkinson said, not knowing is being open to any outcome. So for me, after more than half a century of being a daughter, a sister, a friend, a wife, a mother, a lawyer, a Zen teacher, and I've been a Zen teacher for 50 years, but all of these identities that we move in and out of, it becomes very obvious from this point in life that this is always moving. Is nothing to grab. Nothing to hold on to. It's not going to stay. What remains of all of those selves is this experience right now, just this, right? What's happening now? That's what remains. The Instagram version of this would probably be something like, with our thoughts, we make the world. But I'm going to read to you what the Buddha actually said, okay? It's not bad. This is a translation of from the Pali Canon by Banisara Bhikkhu. And this is, I think, I really, I'll just read it from my notes. Phenomena are preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made of the heart. If you speak or act with a corrupted heart, then suffering follows you. As the wheel of the cart, the track of the ox that pulls it. Phenomena are preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made by the heart. If you speak or act with a calm, bright heart, happiness follows you like a shadow that never leaves. The Buddha's point is that phenomena, which is the world as we are able to receive it and perceive it, only exists through this particular set of eyes with all of your messy, complicated causes and conditions. And we share that mess. Reality is perceived through this body and mind. So it matters what we notice, what we choose to pay attention to. Because what we pay attention to creates our reality. This practice is all about paying attention to that. Our fabrications, what we create, what we impose on our actual experience and our receiving of phenomena. So, as we practice, and I hope those of you who return will keep returning because this is not a once and done thing, as I said, you have to practice. We get to know this mind, body that creates reality. We get to know it a lot better. We learn to observe really carefully without identifying with what we observe. We become open to the outcome. And we know, we feel it in our bodies when we're open to reality and just watching it arrive, whether it's in our bodily experience because we're sick, or whether it's in our smelling the flowers or experiencing whatever. We know when we're open. We also know when we're closed to reality. Being closed to reality hurts. Being open to reality is expansive. You don't feel like you're crawling back in to a little scrap show. Now, I want to be very careful here because, unfortunately, sometimes people think that means that we can banish certain thoughts and say, okay, I'm not going to look at those thoughts. They do not exist for me. And that's not, we don't want to banish or exclude thoughts, feelings, perceptions. That would be kind of creating a war against another part of yourself. Like you, there's you versus you, right? I want to get rid of this part. I want to get rid of this part. And I want to keep this part. We're not talking about that. Rather, simply by noticing this huge array of yous, we can get to know ourselves and how we quickly respond, about how we want to respond. So, what life's going to give us, because it's always going to be a curveball, kids. It's always going to be a curveball. You won't see it coming for the most part. So, when I was home, I went for a walk and I spoke with another neighbor who was sitting on his porch with this incredibly intense, focused gaze out into his garden. He had kind of an angry face. And he was just like, really intense. And I kind of like he was glaring at his own garden, and I was like, what could be going on with this guy? And I said, hi. And he said, oh, hi. And then he said, the squirrels of the universe are plotting against me. I said, ah. I turned my attention to what he was still fixated on. And there was a squirrel sitting on a log, really cute squirrel, eating something from his garden. It was really adorable. And now I do know how it feels to have a garden absolutely decimated by squirrels. I remember watching a squirrel eat like a bite off of a plum and then throw it to the ground, eat more like that. Like, are you kidding me? Just my garden was just decimated by the squirrel, and I really wanted to kill it. Sorry. And the same thing happens with gophers, right? I know how that feels. But I also know that how you decide to interpret that can cause a little bit more harm. Like, I don't think I ever interpreted it as an international squirrel conspiracy. And this guy was going there. The world of squirrels was against him. A lot of extra suffering. I don't think every squirrel is a secret agent. But he did. So our minds do the same thing all the time, right? One person sees a cute squirrel, and another person sees a predator who's eating his garden. Covert operative squirrel. I wanted to put a little cape on him. One person notices a cloud and says, oh, what a beautiful sky. And another person says, oh, it's hot. This is going to ruin my day. Same sky, different reality, mind. So, in our practice, we learn to watch this mind that attaches to ideas and then kind of sticks onto those ideas a lot of meaning, whether it's squirrels or clouds or the state of the world. We practice not banishing the squirrels, the thoughts, the feelings, sensations, the clouds, the heat, the cold. We just notice how our minds label it, interpret it, spin it into making some meaning. And usually that process involves extra suffering because we think it shouldn't be this way. When we practice with this practice of paying attention, that's all we're doing, paying attention and not grabbing and not rejecting. When we practice with paying attention, we get to know our minds in a kind way. We see what we're producing. Like it's almost like on a movie screen in front of you, like, oh, look at that. Oh, and there's that. No rejecting, no grabbing it and calling it mind identifying with it. And naturally, what emerges from this process of just watching your own fabrications is some compassion, some kind feelings towards the one who has got all that going on. Just by simply noticing, a squirrel can go back to just being a squirrel. Doesn't have to be an operative. And our minds can relax, really relax into this. So these experiences at home reminded me of mu. Mu is a koan. The koans are kind of old teaching stories from the Chinese tradition. Mu is the very first koan in the Mumonkan, the Gateless Gate. This is the collection of stories. This one is translated by Kowun Yamada. So this is the very first one. Many of you have heard this. He's super sharp. So these are typically a monk and a student. Sometimes it's a bunch of monks. I like it when there's a bunch of characters. This one's pretty straightforward. A monk asked Joshu. Joshu is the Japanese name for Zhaozhu in Chinese. A monk asked Joshu in all earnestness, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Joshu said, so mu literally is translated typically as No, that's not what it really means. Not in Zen. Mu means to kind of drop the whole scaffolding that has a yes and a no. A yes answer would trap you. You understand? If you said yes, a dog has Buddha nature, then there's something that's separate between the dog and Buddha nature. If you say no, then of course you're denying the dog has Buddha nature. So mu, saying no, kind of rips apart the question, takes away the scaffolding that establishes the question. It kind of removes the having and having not whole framework and points you back to direct practice experience. So on the drive back to Tokoji, I was thinking about mu because the framework, the scaffolding that holds this person together, gone. Just gone. I just didn't know who I am, who she is, who this is. This sense of self and this sense of home just dissolved and integrated into something that I'm a part of, but that I could not grab. So during that drive back, I remembered something I learned in my undergraduate years. I actually only studied, I got a minor in journalism. My major was in physical anthropology. That's primate behavior. Very natural thing to go from primate behavior to this. But in any event, I also took a minor in journalism. And the very first thing you learn when you study journalism is the 5 W's and 1 H. These are questions that journalists use to pin down a story, to get underneath what's going on. And that, of course, is who, what, why, where, when, and the 1 H, how. You know this. So I started kind of playing around with this, the reporter's 5 W's and 1 H, and I used it on myself and on my visit back home. So who was that in the driveway, wondering who she was? And while I was there, I saw friends, I got to see my sangha, but who was that? The me I expected to step back into, like the hermit crab in the shell, wasn't there. And the me who was there, completely ungraspable. And the me who's here, completely ungraspable. It's just changing. That's the who. What? Well, by the time we name what is happening, what's happening, it's already over. It's gone. There's the who, there's the what. When? Well, now slips through your fingers like that. Now? Now, 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 now. The minute you identify a now, it's already over. Where? Well, this was very interesting for me because there I was, right? At this home that I knew was familiar. And yet there was nothing there in a way. Here and there and everywhere seemed to be interpenetrated, interconnected so deeply that there wasn't a where. There was no place to hang my hat. Why? For most of my life, that's been my favorite question. Why? Not anymore so much, because guess what? I can never find a why. The causes and conditions that take us to this moment are so vast, it's impossible to say why. It's like a ball of yarn. You cannot pull out the centered thing and say, there it is, all the way back to the beginning of your winding that ball, because it's not your ball. It's everything that ever happened. So why am I here in this driveway, emptying my groceries and wondering, where did I go? Anytime in life, that's why. Pretty broad. And then there's how. Gotten through all the W's, who, what, why, where, when, and why. How? Well, how is it? How is it for you right now? This is how. How? How has this little different feature, doesn't it? It is just right now, how. And then it's gone too. So these five W's in lineage kind of undo or dismantle the story that I have of this person. Just the way Mu dismantles the structure of dog and bird nature. It's like these questions themselves, whether it's a koan or the five W's in lineage. It's like an editor. You've typed up this beautiful thing, your story of who you are, and you hand it to the editor for publication, and the editor looks at it and presses delete, and then hands it back, the blank piece of paper, and says, "Now it's done. Congratulations." That blank page of not knowing is my willingness to be open to the outcome. We'll see. Having a mind of observation instead of wanting to have an opinion and an idea and cling to that. So I get back to Jikoji and I unpack here. Nobody asks me who I am, they know better. And I start, it's funny when you start noticing things on a certain theme, everybody who practices has had this experience. When you start noticing, it's like when you get a new car and then everybody's driving that car in the freeway. It's like that with practice too. You start noticing, it's like a little current is running through your life, and then you start noticing that current everywhere. And I have a paperweight on my desk. I'll show it to you. This paperweight has been with me for many years. My dear friend Nancy Hilliard gave it to me when I became when I first became a priest, a black robe. And it has my name, it says Nenzen on it. And then it says, "This is not mine. This is not I. This is not myself." And I really love this because it's a prism. And so when you look in it, I'll pass it around, but please be careful with it. If you look in it, you'll see everything's reflected. It's you and everyone else. So there's show and tell. Well, here's the Buddha speaking about this more extensively. So that little teaching is kind of a another Instagram version of this. You ready? This is also from the Pali Canon. When you speak of this, I am, what is it that you speak of as I am? Friends, this is the Buddha speaking. I do not speak of form as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from form. I do not speak of feeling as I am, nor of perception as I am, nor of volitional formations as I am, nor of consciousness as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from consciousness. Although the notion I am has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five aggregates, which are subject to clinging, still, I do not regard anything among them as this I am. Suppose, friends, there is the scent of a blue, red, or white lotus. Would one be speaking rightly if one would say, "The scent belongs to the petals," or "The scent belongs to the stalk," or "The scent belongs to the pistils"? No, friend. And how, friends, should one answer if one is to answer rightly? Answering rightly, friend, one should answer, "The scent belongs to the flower." Friends, I do not speak of form as I am, nor I am apart from form, of feelings as I am, nor apart from feelings, or perception, or formations, or consciousness. I really love that the Buddha says, even though the notion of I am has not vanished from me, I still do not think this I am. So, after hearing the Buddha say this in this very structured and I think very poetic and careful expression about the five aggregates, which are subject to clinging, these are ways in which we identify ourselves, this body, this mind, this consciousness, this smell, I am, I am, I am, I am, I am. I wonder what he would say if we put him in front of the reporter with five W's and a one H. So you're the Buddha in your driveway. We're going to play a game. Forgive me. No right answers, just play, okay? You're in the driveway, you're unpacking your groceries, and you are the Buddha, okay? You are the Buddha with the top knot, the whole thing. And a modern journalist walks up with a microphone and says, "Hey, who are you?" What does the Buddha reply? Any Buddha who wants to can reply. And there's no right answer. Who are you?
You.
I am you, yes. I am Mickey Mouse, yes. I'm a tree, yes. I appear to be this, whatever she is, whoever she is. Whenever, however, why ever. No fixed self. That's what I think the Buddha would say. No fixed version. So the reporter goes, "Oh, okay." Then the reporter, a little disturbed, he hasn't gotten one of his W's answered properly, really. So he says, "Well, what is this? What's happening?" And the Buddha would say, "What is this? Does anybody know what's going on right now?"
It's a dream.
It's a dream, yeah. Or I have no idea. Or I'm sitting here talking to you, listening to you, breathing. So maybe the Buddha would say, the what is moving, already gone, already over. That what that just arose is gone. And so the reporter is, what's happening? This isn't going the way I thought it should go. So the Buddha asks, well, when? And the Buddha replies, it's over. It's beginning. It's over. It's beginning. It's over. It's beginning. There's no end. There's no beginning. It goes on like this, just change. The reporter asks, well, where is this going on? And the Buddha says, everywhere, throughout all time and space. And the reporter is being kind of kicked out into the outer realms and probably isn't happy. So the reporter says, why? 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 Why are we here? Why are we doing this? Anybody have an answer? That was my dad's line. Always. That was my favorite. I almost put it in here. My dad, I'd say, why does the world have to be this way? My dad said, well, why not? It's true, right? And I think the Buddha is another way of saying this, why not, is because of everything that has ever has been. Okay? Because of everything that's ever been is why we're here. So now the reporter has had every question dismantled. There's no structure left for an article. So he sadly says, how? How does it work? How does it work? And the Buddha might answer like this. Just with your paying attention, your awareness, just like that. This. And with compassion for the one who's experiencing it, and therefore for everybody. And I think this how is how we get to the who, what, why, when, where, and why. I think this is the how. And who and when we and why we find ourselves here is all kind of contained in how. We find ourselves in the how we notice, what we pay attention to. This moment, breath by breath, is how we are here and alive. This shared existence, how is this mind? This is how we are howing, we are howing reality. And then this how is where we get a chance to be awake, like to be open to what's actually happening, to be present for our own experience, what the mind creates, how we attach meaning to it, and to let it dismantle and just experience this how, moment by moment, watching whatever this is, experience this. And this is how our mind makes up the world, how our own experience comes through this body and mind, through this set of eyes and heart. How is where we put our attention? And it's really, really, really important to our well-being that you pay attention to what you pay attention to. It's like you want to feed the monsters, you'll suffer. You want to feed the angels. You'll have a different point of view. And that's what the Buddha was talking about. This sense of awareness has much to do with your well-being in the world. And of course, if you have well-being, if you develop this awareness that allows everything, then you allow that for other people as well. Stop making war here. Probably stop making war everywhere. So in Zen, we often say that our awareness of our own Buddha nature is our birthright. Our capacity to be awake, to have compassion, and to be wise. It's not something that is earned or proved or given to you, like bestowed upon you. It's already present before this idea of who you are, a self, even as creator. And yet, we do need to practice to return to that home, your own awakened Buddha nature. Kōbun Chino Otogaro Roshi is the founder of this temple. He one time gave a calligraphy scroll to someone, to one of his students, and then he translated it as, "The sacred land is in your mind. Sacred land is in your mind. That's home. Sacred land. It's not in the future. It's not in your memories. It's not in a better job or a better body, a better partner. It exists here. In this moment. And it's always here, wherever you are. And this is where we meet. This, right now. This is home. Whether it's in your driveway, on the road between here and that other place, wherever you're going next, at Trader Joe's. At your work, the middle of an argument, this is home. In the middle of making love, this is home. This, whoever, whatever, wherever, whenever, why ever, is how we are already at home. Okay, your turn. I know it's hot. I really wanted to have a fan for you all to do this. Yeah, to create that in your mind. Okay, it's really cold. Doesn't have to be about this. Everything's about this.
That
Beautiful service. Beautiful. Someone made the sound over there. Question? Yeah. Someone online? Daryl?
Hello,
Can you?
little sister. How are you?
Hello, Gerald. I'm well. How about you?
Yeah. I remember, if I'm not mistaken, years ago when you had become Eno and you were taking questions. And my question to you was, am I here?
Oh, I was Shuso, you mean? Shiso.
Shuso, I'm sorry,
I was
Shuso.
Shuso.
And
What did I
you
say?
said yes. You said yes. I know that you're here.
Well,
Well, my question is the same one. Am I here?
Carol, thank you. Your question is really lovely. And yes, you're here, but the question is, where is here? And who is here? And that's a moving target. And I really like this because it really asks, is this real? And as Etsudo said, we're in a dream. Well, that's one way of looking at it, and yet you're here. So the way I like to think about reality is I have no idea if I'm in a dream or if this is real or if I'm in someone else's dream, but it's as real as it gets. This is as real as it gets in any moment. So, yes, we are relatively here, and absolutely, I have no idea.
Thank you.
I see you, so I think you might be here. Oh, thank you. Who else has a question online? Someone? Just unmute yourself. Hi, Ben, I see you. Hi, Seisho. Hi, Randy. These are all Sangha members far flung. Everybody else here? Check us out. Do you have any helpful words for me around how to feel these stuff? I repaired a toilet yesterday, and I thought it should have been somebody else actually who did that. And I was feeling a little, I have to say something like resentful. And I got stuck there, and I don't like being stuck there. And so we all get stuck about all these little things that can happen. And I could use a hand. You'd literally needed a hand. You needed a plumber's hand. Yeah, well, I mean, in my own practice, I, of course, have moments where I think, well, this shouldn't be happening. Why do I have to do that? Or I don't like this part of the reality that's here. And I guess over time, we kind of can lash at that. Like, who is the one who thinks she shouldn't do this? Like, who is that? You know, like, is there another version of myself that's like the Queen of England that is here right now with me? Or is there this idea that I have that it's beneath me to fix the toilet? And how is that? And it can go on and on, this question about who is it that's having difficulty? And on the other hand, on the other plumber's hand, you're allowed to ask for help, you know. You're allowed to say, okay, maybe I'm not the best person for this job and I should ask for help. So you don't actually have to suffer and suffer and suffer. So first you're suffering, fix a toilet. That's not necessarily fun, although with your mind, it could be a big adventure.
I actually did enjoy the fixing of the toilet.
Oh, okay.
That
But
in
you
itself,
just
and I,
resented that you had to do it.
right, there was a relationship issue going
Okay, sorry, I didn't get it. Now I get it. Oh boy. Well,
I'm
there's
sure
a,
no one else has.
oh no, nobody ever has that thought. Yeah, well, that really goes back to who's asking, who's resenting. Mm-hmm. I see you, just a second. And I guess, who is the one before this one who thinks she doesn't have the right to ask and say, hey, I see this needs to be done, I don't want to do it, you do it. Not like you should, or it's your job, or you ought to, or shaming, or blaming, but I really don't want to do it, could you do this? Like, what's wrong with being Jackie who says, I don't want to do this, could you do it? Because when you go, if you don't ask, you don't have any possibility of a different outcome, right? You've already made up your mind about how it's going to go. And how it's going to go is you have to do it, darn it, and then you have to resent it, darn it. And it's like, you know, planting a seed of future not happy feelings, right? So I guess the trick is to remember you have a choice all the time. I can see Shoho's hand over there. He's got something.
I'm just thinking, I get in the same frame of mind, Jackie. Like I get what I call grouchy. Yeah, you're doing something and you don't like to do it, or it's a problem. You think, why should I be doing it? This is really hard to do, but every once in a while, I try to do this. It's like, I expand the view. It's actually difficult to do because you're really focused on one thing of the problem. I expand the view. If I can expand the view, I see. But you're talking about that there's a causal condition to work. And there's a resultant. This law, they call it karma, the law of causality. Something happened. Something affected me for certain causes and conditions. What I'm going to do, or how I'm going to react to, is going to have repercussions. It's hard to do, but if I can expand that narrow focus on just that problem, I don't know. Like, it kind of relaxed the association with the issue. See that the council field before and after. It's up to you.
Like you don't take it personally anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Toilet is not a covert squirrel. Trying to ruin your life. Well, my little trick is to play, to make everything play. And because I like to play. And so I can turn almost anything that I have to do into play. But I often ask for help. And but play, and you're good at playing too. You could write a poem. Anybody else? Yes.
Leading to the part about I am, I'm curious on how do you reconcile two spheres? One sphere being the one that we are discussing, there's no fixed self, and you know, and where everything is in a state of flux. But the other sphere of modern world, other Western world, where there's a strong emphasis on identity and unmovable, you know, extremely fixed, immutable self. Right? So, how do you reconcile this? Because, so since there's a modern world that surrounds this sphere, and one which we all need to belong to at some point.
I can answer in a very Zen way, just a gesture. These don't exist separately, right? that enough, or do you want more?
How
do you can ask for more. I'll say something more. Okay. It's both and all the time, friends. Both and all the time. I'm not telling you to diminish yourself into non-existence. I'm saying recognize who the self is, which is moving and connected. And it's not so that this practice is not designed to have you become a blob. I'm like, oh, whatever happens, man, it's cool. That's not, we want you to be engaged in your own life, not to waste your life, yours, your individual expression of the Dharma, of all of life, right? The Dharma in the phenomenological way. You are an expression of all. So are all of you. So is this floor and this stick and all of my loving friends out there. You know, we don't want you to pretend not to be you and melt into nothingness. We also want you to recognize that you're not in it alone. That this manifestation is so deeply interconnected to all of these other individuals individuating that they can't be separated. So if you have a mind that can hold these things together, hold them together, be fully me, and also recognize that it's not just me. It's everything that ever existed embodied in this moment, in this expression. And that's why you want to be skillful with what you do with your life, because it has repercussions forever. You're not in charge of them all, but you're in charge of your intention about what you put, or as one of the students here talked about, planting seeds. Careful what you plant. So for me, it's not that difficult. I think with some time practicing, you get so that you're very comfortable with what shows up in this mirror, this wall. It's not just your shadow. You might have noticed everybody else's shadow's there too. Yours is there. So is everyone else's. So this both and is very, I would say, critical to your understanding of existence, this shared existence. It's a very important question, and I encourage you to polish that question. Well, I heard the bell, and that means it's time for tea. So we're going to close with on the same page you'll see after the Dharma talk. And I thank you for your attention and your practice. It's very hot up here. So I thank all of you for being here today. It's really wonderful to see you all. And please come home.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.